Welcome, members. We're going to call this meeting to order. And I'm thinking today is not the first day of school, but it's sort of like the first day of class. So we're all here for the first time. And like many committee chairs have done in the past, I want us to go around, introduce ourselves. And this isn't just members. This includes staff as well. And I'd like that we would all sort of say a little bit about our first experience voting and what that was like and what you recall from that day. And should you be in a situation where you've not been yet able to vote, just explain what your situation is and why you haven't voted at this time. So we will start on my left, and we'll start with you, Representative, or let's start with your researcher. Let's just go in order. Actually, we're introducing ourselves, who we are, what our role is, and then ultimately talking about our first voting experience.
Okay. Let's see.
That was a while ago. Joe Marble, I'm the research for this committee for the GOP. I covered GovOps and elections for about 6 years prior to running the Transportation Committee the last 4 years as committee administrator. So I'm looking forward to this. I don't remember. I've voted every election since I was 18, so that's a while, I don't know, a while ago. So I don't remember the detail on the first time, though.
That's okay. We're not going to press you to dig in your file cabinet and find that information. So, Representative New?
Hi there. I'm Representative Ann New. I represent most of Chisago County now. Interestingly, my birthday is November 6th. So when the year I turned 18, Election Day was on November 4th. So I missed it by just 2 days, which was, of course, always disappointing. But I would suggest the reason I am here today is because of my first experience voting, in that I was a little older. My parents didn't teach me how to vote. And I didn't do it. And then when I was 24 the first time I voted, and I had good friends who were involved in politics, I said, you gotta sit down and teach me what this is all about. And so not only did I vote that year, but I became involved in politics and in activism, and have been around ever since.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Jim Nash. I represent District 47A, which is Western Carver County. My first experience voting, I was too young to vote in for President Reagan's second term, but I voted my first time for the recently deceased President Bush, and have voted ever since, and have volunteered for a lot of Republican campaigns even long before I was a eligible voter. So been actively engaged since I was about 10.
Great. Thank you.
My name is Kristen Butter. I am from District 34B, Maple Grove, and Osseo. I am the vice chair for this committee. Voting was a big deal in my family. I got to go with my parents, even as a young child, to go with them and kind of tag along. And I was always very curious about the process. And I know that there was a lot of fanfare in my household the first time that I was eligible to vote. So it was a pretty big thrill for me and for my family to do my civic duty. So I'm happy to be here today and be part of that democratic process.
Great, thank you. Yinye?
Hi, everyone. My name is Yinye Vang. I'm representing Dean's Committee, a legislative assistant. My first time voting was in 2012. And so I had a really great time voting for President Obama. And I remember it being kind of scary, but really exciting.
Great. And I'm going to hold order here, so I'll go next. Representative Raymond Dean, 59B, really happy to be the chair of this committee and look forward to some great things. My first voting experience was maybe a bit unusual. My parents were big voters. My mom was always an election judge. And when I turned 18, I could not vote. I lost my right to vote, and it wasn't until a few years later that I had my right to vote restored. And at the time, back then we called it couch surfing. I think I was actually homeless. And the people that I was staying with, I went to the polls, and they vouched for me that I was staying with them, and that was the first opportunity that I had to vote. And I voted in every election then. A little truth,
I did not vote a straight party line ticket the first time I voted. So, thank you.
The first time.
The first time.
Hi, I'm Amanda Rudolph, and I'm the committee administrator, and been to the polls ever since I was a little girl with my parents, and the first time that I voted was for Bill Clinton.
My name is Matt Gehring. I'm the nonpartisan research analyst for this committee. I guess my first experience voting probably was going with my parents when I was young to back in Wisconsin. I would go with my mom and go into the voting booth, and I would be the one to read the names to her of all the candidates, and then she would tell me which one she's going to vote for, which I won't share with this committee. So that's my first experience voting, and then my first actual experience voting was in 2000 when I was in college. I voted absentee, and since I moved to Minnesota, I've been an election judge, and I think I've ever only voted absentee. I don't think I've ever actually stood in line and voted in a polling place myself.
Elise Mann from 56B, which is Burnsville and Lakeville. My first time voting was pretty special, just because I'm an immigrant, and so being able to vote for the first time was a really big privilege to be involved in the process for the first time.
I'm Lori Halverson. I represent Eagan, Minnesota, and the first time that I got to vote, I was 18 years old. I was just saying to Representative Bernardi, this could also be called "How old are you?" It was. Then I turned 18, and that was 1988. So I'm the same age as other people across the aisle here, and I don't remember who I voted for, but I do remember the thrill of. My polling place was down the hill from my apartment in Mankato, and I felt like I just flew down the hill to go and vote. I was so excited to be able to do that, and I registered same day was really excited to be able to do that and brought my utility bill, and I had my driver's license, and also know that I have not been a straight ticket party voter in my life, so... You're in good company, Representative Dean.
Hi, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi. I represent the communities of New Brighton, Fridley, and Spring Lake Park. And my first experience with, when I was young, voting was with President Obama. No, I'm just kidding. It looks like it might have been possible. You believe me, I'm not sure. Or you were a guest. Voting for our... wonderful Vice President Walter Mondale.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mina Safi, and I'm the DFL Caucus Researcher. I'll be working on this committee, State Government Finance and Government Operations and Local Government. And the first time that I was able to vote was actually in the 2016 election. And it was really special because I come from Syrian and French immigrants. Before coming here, I lived in Syria. And obviously, as you all know, that in Syria you don't get many options. So to be able to vote here and actually be involved in the process was very special. And I was involved in campaigns before then, but that was the first time when I was actually able to make my voice heard. So it was special.
Thank you. And Representative Driscoll.
Well, good morning. I understand we're talking about what we do on summer vacation. Is that correct, Mr. Chair? My first opportunity to vote was in 1982. Freshman year in college, and I was also an election judge that year, which is kind of interesting, and that was back before we had automatic tabulating machines like we do today. And I remember sitting counting votes until the wee hours of the morning, and when I went home, my dad was getting up to go to work while I was getting ready to go to bed, and that was really kind of surreal at 18 to be able to see that kind of a thing. It's like it's just different to see morning from that perspective after you've been up all night, and that was before college, where that might have been more of a regular occurrence for some people. Not for me, though, but that's my first experience in ending up being involved in the voting process here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative. Can you also tell us your district?
Oh, District 13B, which is the Sartell-Sauk Rapids, St. Stephen Holding Port area, and a number of townships in between.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, and welcome. I look forward to a great session. And as mentioned in many conversations, we may not always agree, but we're going to work towards
civil discourse around these issues related to elections. In your folder, you'll actually find the committee rules. So take a look at those. Those will how we'll be conducting business here in the committee. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask now, or we can address them at another time. They're kind of standard what we've done in the past on both sides of the aisle. So I hope you will consider that. We do have a quorum present, so this meeting is in order. And if there's no questions about the rules at this time, I will move on to the Secretary of State, Steve Simon. He is here today to give us a elections overview, and I think he'll be able to give us a little bit of insight in some of the testimony of the couple bills that are here before us. So, Secretary Simon, if you'll introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. It's a pleasure to be before you. I was on this committee before with some of you in this room, and I've worked with many of you on elections issues on a bipartisan basis, so thank you for having me. I've been asked to come here for two reasons. The first is, as you heard the Chair say, to give a brief elections overview of the election just passed. I think the PowerPoint is up. So let's jump right into it. So just as an overview, our office serves as the chief elections administrator. So we work a lot with counties, with cities, with townships, the people who really do the frontline election administration. So our office, we don't count a single vote, not one. We don't buy and own regularly elections equipment. Those things happen at the local level. Those happen at the county, the cities, and the townships. So we have great relationships and strong and regular relationships with our partners in local government. And we're proud of the system that we created and that we built over the decades in Minnesota. This election, we were for the second time in a row number one in the country in voter turnout. That's a big hats off and credit to voters of Minnesota who really do show up and turn out. And I think that's a good and healthy thing. One of the things that we do in our office is we operate and maintain, and you're going to hear a lot about this throughout the session, I suspect, including today, what's called SVRS, the Statewide Voter Registration System. And it is what it sounds like, but it's really more than that. It's about more than just voter registration. It's a database of all Minnesota voters. It's really the backbone of the election system. It was built with federal and state money, about $6 million, and completed in 2004. And it's been asked to do a lot since its inception. So it's not just about voter registration. So a lot of laws have been passed since then that put a lot of new duties into the basket and new pressures on the system as well. But we operate that. We also certify all election voting systems. As you know from personal experience, we accept candidate filings for federal and state offices. We train election officials and we conduct most recounts. What I mean by most is if there's a recount in a jurisdiction that crosses a county line, then we're involved. If it doesn't, then we're not involved. So, for example, in the 2016 election, there was a recount in a state Senate race that was entirely within Hennepin County in the Minnetonka area. We weren't involved in that. But if it crosses a county line, which most do, then we are involved. That's the simple rule. Just to give you some context, there are more than 2,000 township elections annually, 900 city elections on a two-year cycle, 300 school district elections on a two-year cycle, and 20 other elections on a two-year cycle, not to mention the elections that we're familiar with, the state and federal elections that are also on a two-year cycle. That's a lot of elections, especially when you consider, and I always try to repeat this point, of Minnesota's 87 counties, only 9 counties have full-time, year-round people dedicated only to elections. In the vast majority of the state, and many of you know this from your own districts, that's not the case. The person who does elections wears many hats. That person might do property taxes. That person might do ditch and drainage work. That person might do certain inspections work. So it's only in 9 counties that there's full-time, year-round folks doing it. So really, hats off to them, because elections go off very, very smoothly in the state and have had for decades, despite the fact that in many areas, they're really challenged in terms of bandwidth, and they still manage year in and year out to put on very good, very thorough, and very efficient elections. So I just want to give you a quick snapshot of some of the voter outreach work that we do. This is in statute, by the way, in terms of the work that we do to inform and educate Minnesotans about what's out there, about registration, about voting, about where to vote, about how to vote. and try to make sure people are in a position to exercise that right to vote if they choose. So we partner with organizations around the state to make sure that Minnesotans know how to determine all of those things. We partner with individuals, with nonprofits, with businesses, and we do that kind of across the board. And in the interest of time, I just want to isolate a couple of these things. One is the work that we do with the disability community. We have a standing disability advisory committee in our office. We meet quarterly with a broad cross-section of the disability community, many groups and individuals, and we're really looking for their counsel and their guidance in terms of how we can make things more accessible for eligible voters with a disability. The other thing that I'll just highlight that's on the slide is we've really taken a deep dive and tried to work with our youngest voters. And by youngest, I mean ages 18 to 24. No mystery to any of you that in Minnesota and in everywhere I'm aware of in America, our youngest voters vote at far lower rates than the rest of us. It's not an easy problem to solve or challenge to address. If it were easy, it would have been done a long time ago. So I just highlighted a couple of initiatives that we started. One is something called Ballot Bowl. It is what it sounds like. We went to college campuses and said, hey, let's have a competition among students to register voters. And we've had reports from campuses, a number of campuses, of college Democrats and college Republicans actually collaborating and cooperating to get their schools total up. And I think that's a good thing. So we had 68 colleges and universities last time, two-year, four-year, public, private, participated in this program. We also wanted to get habits started even earlier by going into high schools. So we started the first ever statewide mock election for high school students, keeping it just a one contest. It was the gubernatorial contest this last time, President of the United States in 2016. When we started this in 2016, we thought, okay, let's shoot for 100 high schools. It's a nice round number, it's triple digits, it's memorable. Instead, we got nearly 300 high schools that first year, about 90,000 ballots. In the election just this past November, that was up to 130,000 ballots. And it just gives schools the opportunity to expose students to the idea of voting, and they can run the election the way they want to. We don't micromanage. Some want it in the classroom, some want it in the lunchroom, some want it over a rolling period, some want it in just one day. That's not up to us, it's up to them and what works for the school. The importance of it is just getting students exposed to that, and they often discover there's less there than meets the eye. We have students who say things sometimes like, really, that's all you do is darken an oval? I thought there was writing involved. I thought I would have to spell names. I thought I would, I mean, things that we take for granted. I said, high school student might not know. You mean it's just like a standardized test? I just have to darken an oval? Oh, I thought it was much more complicated than that. So that alone can be just a useful exercise, and the participation has been tremendous. We also partner with the business community. We have a relationship with, I think at last count, it was something like 153 chambers, I think that's right, across the state, nonprofit organizations, sports teams, professional sports teams as well, and of course, military service members and their family, as well as the military veteran community as well. To the election itself. So these are the bottom line numbers. We had a little north of 3.5 million registered voters out of more than 4 million who were eligible. So if you look at the percentage of eligible voters who are registered, it's quite high. It's 86.8% of eligible voters are registered. About 2.6 million of those voted, 64.25% turnout. That was good enough to be number one in the country, second year in a row that we were number one in the country. And I really have to pay tribute to election judges. I did not know that Mr. Gehring has been in the past an election judges, but I always resolve to thank one, past or present, if I meet them, and maybe some of you have been, and Representative Driscoll said he was too. Thank you, because as you can see, it takes an army of people to put on an election in the state, and the people who do this work, I like to say, they're not doing it for their health, they're not doing it to get rich. Yes, there's a stipend, but it's a very long day, and we need those folks. We need that army of people to populate those polling places in order to be fair arbiters and to make sure that things run smoothly. Fortunately, we have them, but that's something that we've got to shore up and make sure is always there. So hats off to them for doing that as well. So while we're number one in the country in voter turnout, obviously that is not uniform across the state, either geographically or demographically. Here's a geographic look. Representative Nash, what can I say? Carver County was number one in 2016, as we know, fell off slightly, only slightly. This election, I think, is number two, maybe number three. But you can see where the pockets here are of higher than average turnout, where there's lower than average turnout, and so it's certainly not uniform across the state. One area that we've seen a huge era spike in participation is in the use of no excuses absentee voting. Some of you were here in 2013 when that law was passed. Before 2013 in Minnesota, the only way you could vote absentee is if you certified under penalty of perjury that you were either going to be away from your precinct that day or you were too sick or disabled to participate in the typical way in a polling place. In 2013, the legislature got rid of that requirement. It's now there's no requirement for an excuse. And to put it mildly, Minnesotans have flocked to this option. You can see the chart here. Basically, the numbers are, and I think that's on the next slide, you can see the increase in participation. Yeah, 24.5% of total votes are now absentee. So in this new environment where almost a quarter of voters are voting before Election Day, one way to think about Election Day now is not that it's the day that you vote, it's that it's the last day of voting. We have a 46-day absentee ballot period, and more people are choosing, they're voting with their feet and saying, I don't necessarily want to vote on a given day during prescribed hours in a prescribed place. That doesn't work for my life or my work schedule or my child care schedule. Or maybe I just want to do research and I want the ballot mailed to me so I can sit down and Google a few people and figure out who I want to vote for. But Minnesotans, I think, quite clearly really love this option. Use of online tools. In 2013, the legislature also passed and joined the bandwagon, and now the vast majority of states have online voter registration as well. And as you'll see here, we had 142,000 people who used the online voter registration application at mnvotes.org. A little over half of them were new people. And I always point out, and it's an easy mistake to make, sometimes people see the voter registration numbers and assume, and it's natural to assume, oh, look at all these new voters. But as you can see here, a little over half of those are new. The rest are people that we all know, maybe some of you who have moved, and you have to re-register. So not all of the registration numbers are new people. Here, a little over half were new who use the online tool. So I think overall I would say that 2018 was a very good year for democracy in Minnesota in terms of the numbers, in terms of the trends. I'm very proud of the nonpartisan staff in the office who put in a lot of work working with our partners to make sure the elections run smoothly. Again, we don't count the votes, we don't own the equipment, but we work with those who do those things. And I think we have a very good relationship with our partners in local government. We could not do this without a strong relationship with the counties, the cities, and the townships, and we always want to nurture and strengthen that as well. And with any luck, we'll go for a three-peat in 2020, and maybe we can be number one again. No promises, but that's always the goal. I just wanted to call out a few issues, some positive, some negative. And if we had to think about it, which we did for this hearing, what were some of the issues? One is SVRS performance, and I think the bills that will be before you will go a long, long way towards resolving these issues. The system showing its age. It was built and built very well in 2014, but like a lot of things built well in 2014, it's showing its age and it needs substantial modernization and upgrading. And these are some of the issues that were identified in the Office of Legislative Auditor report, and the bills that you'll be hearing today will go a long way towards resolving that situation. Political apparel. You might remember that there was a case, a Minnesota case actually, that made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court that struck down on First Amendment grounds a law that was passed by this legislature 30 years ago, I think 1987 or 1988, saying that our law was too broad from the standpoint of the First Amendment because it said that you can't have political garb or clothing or depictions in a polling place. And by a 7-2 decision, which you don't see that often in the Supreme Court, they said, yeah, that's too broad. Political could mean just about anything. It's in the eye of the beholder. You got to more narrowly tailor it. So we were thinking that because that happened during the interim and there wasn't time, as there is this session, to clean up the law to make it consistent with the Supreme Court's ruling, which we will be doing this year with your blessing and your votes, that there might be some confusion at the polling places, maybe even some dust-ups from people who claimed they could wear one thing or didn't want to wear something, or maybe election judges who hadn't heard about the decision and who wanted to confiscate clothing that they no longer could because of the Supreme Court ruling. But I will tell you, we were prepared for that. We were gaming that out. I think there were, I mean, almost no incidents that I know of. Maybe you all do, but we get these reports and we're sounding out the counties. I think either people heard about the decision or there was really good training that went on at the local level of election judges, so there were hardly any incidents that I know of any misunderstandings, and hopefully this session with your support we can clean up that law to make it consistent. In case you're wondering what that means, our interpretation and the interpretation of most other people who have looked at the decision is to say that from now on the only thing that you can really ban in the polling place, because the court did say, I think they said something like, there is a constitutional authority for the idea that the polling place is an oasis of calm or something like that, you know, where you're not electioneering and all the rest. So what you can preclude or keep out are depictions of candidates or parties that are on the ballot that day. The key is that day. So this last election, if someone wanted to wear a MAGA hat or a Trump t-shirt, that's okay. He wasn't on the ballot. The president was not on the ballot. Or anyone else who isn't on the ballot, or a party who's not on the ballot. But if it's a party or a person on the ballot that day, the court strongly implied that, okay, that's okay, but that the Minnesota law on the books for 30 years went too far in their judgment on First Amendment grounds by just saying political, which in essence they said is too loose, too broad. So, but there were a few problems there. Cybersecurity, we're going to hear a lot about in the next segment here of the hearing, Mr. Chair. So I won't belabor the point other than say it's a constant and ongoing concern. We'll talk about that later. But we did partner with the Department of Homeland Security this year, both in Washington and here in Minnesota, and with the National Guard for the first time, who wanted to use the election as an opportunity to join with us on some joint election-related cybersecurity efforts. I'm happy to stand for any questions. I know this is sort of a lead-in to the bills, Mr. Chair, that you plan to entertain today, but I'm happy to answer any questions or take comments or suggestions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I think we have a few questions, and Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, on the previous slide, if we could go to that, you had referenced that the SVRS system was built in 2014. I think you meant to say 2004, am I correct?
If I said that,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, sorry.
Just for clarification for individuals, because that system isn't 4 years old, it's 14 years old.
Correct.
That was put together under then Secretary of State and now Senator Kiffmeyer on that. Mr. Chair, a follow-up?
Sure.
If we go to the slide just before this, Mr. Secretary, you talked about people registering online and voting and that not everybody who was registering might have been new voters. I made you aware a few years ago of a situation that had occurred with my mother and her being lost in the poll books system. And that had occurred again this year, and it also included me this year. And on the day of the election, I contacted you directly to raise my concerns on that. And I know that we're probably not in a position today with our agenda to discuss that issue, but what made me think about it is your talking about it today in your presentation, and also having received for the second or third time my confirmation that I am now a registered voter in the state of Minnesota, which creates some angst in my precinct, where the people come and say, we can't find you, we're embarrassed, how come we can't find you as an election judge in the system? And I'm trying to quell their fears, and they're saying, and this is really weird because you are on the ballot, but you yet don't show up in the precinct. What's going on here? So you had indicated that you're going to get back to me, and I'm hoping that at some point soon you can offer some resolutions so that myself and others don't get lost in the system who are voters for many years and bona fide voters, and so we don't have to go through that kind of a situation in the future.
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, thank you for that, and I will take responsibility if you didn't get an answer to that, but I remember that call or that text, I can't remember which it was, to me on Election Day, and we did look into it, and we found that, not to throw anyone under the bus, but that you were in the system, even though they told you you weren't. I suspect, without knowing, it might have been a training issue. I think you had indicated, and I forget whether this was by text or by phone call, that somebody, whoever it was, perhaps an election judge, tried a couple times, a couple different ways. He or she claimed they couldn't find you, but we did check on that day and found that you were in the system. Again, not to cast aspersions, but it sounds like maybe someone just had difficulty finding it, but you were in the system. I just want to reassure you. I remember it very well, and you were in the system.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, I would like to see where I was in the system, because like many Americans who are eligible to vote, there are lower level or lowercase and uppercase letters in my name, and there are also a punctuation in my case, an apostrophe in my name, and other voters may have experienced the same thing, and two voters back-to-back, my mother and myself, could not be found in the system, and whether it's a training issue or not, or it's how it's inputted into the system, I think that we need to get on top of that so that there's a standardized system and which databases we draw that information from. For example, we all know DPS uses all capital letters, no punctuation. If I were to have registered that day and used uppercase and lowercase and apostrophe, and that's how it was built into the system, I may not be able to be identified in one system or the other. So, again, I'm just renewing my concern on that, as it affected us, my mother twice in the last two cycles, and myself. And I'm in a position as an elected official in this legislature to raise that issue for all Minnesotans that might be affected by that. So
fair enough.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Representative Bowner.
Mr. Chair, Secretary of State Simon, just a question on that. So it does sound like there is some concern. I know we're going to talk in a moment about a couple of bills that are coming up and some funding to improve our system, and that includes some additional training for local election officials. And it sounds like this might be a really great opportunity to incorporate some of that into the training. Is that something that you would be open to doing, or having that incorporated into that local training?
Secretary Sen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner. Yes, absolutely. You know, we don't, I guess the way to put it when it comes to election judges is we help to train the trainers. The actual training is done at the city and county level, as you may know, so we're not there training them, but we work hand in hand with those who do the training and help troubleshoot issues that might come up. And it sounds like, not just anecdotally, but maybe beyond that, this is one of those tricky issues, particularly in the case of a name with multiple capital letters and punctuation.
Yes, Representative Bain.
If I may, one other. So in the earlier slides, you talked a little bit about youth outreach. And maybe this is a little bit of a nicer question, but I think that I see a lot of youth in my community, and I suspect in a lot of ours, who are extremely passionate about the issues and are tuned in a way that some generations have not been. And they're really excited to participate. So I guess to that point, my question for you is, you know, when we talked about some of these new, the ballot bowl and the mock elections, do you have any other additional goals that you'd like to expand, or any additional programs that you think might help increase that participation and keep us as a number one in participation?
Secretary Sen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner. Yeah, I mean, it's a cooperative effort. You know, youth in government, for example, just overran the Capitol last week in a joyful kind of way. And, you know, so there are a lot of people doing this kind of work. And as I mentioned, if it were easy, it would have been solved and done and challenge overcome years ago. But for a lot of reasons, you know, young people are more reticent about voting. And so some of it is information, some of it is legislation to ease the process, some of it is initiatives that don't require statutory authorization like the things I talked about, but some of it, to be candid, is just plain one-on-one conversations. We all know people of all ages in our districts, they don't want to vote. And notwithstanding the constituents that you mentioned, there are people of all ages that we all know who just aren't interested in it. They either feel burned by it, they feel disconnected, they feel disappointed, they feel even disgusted with a lot of things about, you know, government or politics, or for whatever reason, and that is a tougher nut to crack. And I'm not sure that we can just legislate our way around that. That has to do with conversations and attitudes, and we're always searching for the best ways to get to folks, to let them know that they ought to consider exercising the right to vote. There's no one simple answer, but we're working on a lot of fronts and with a lot of partners, on youth in particular.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here in that there are a couple information in your folder, and I'd like House Research Matt Gehring to sort of speak to those pieces of information.
Mr. Chair, there's just one item in your packet that might be useful to committee members. I don't have a formal overview or anything for elections. One thing about this committee is that all of you, as elected officials, you all have a level of expertise in election law because you have filed for office, filed campaign reports, and know more about this process than anybody in my office would. So we don't do an overview of election law for you. But there's in your packet this memo that just has a list of frequently requested election statutes. So if you're a member who likes to actually pull up the statute books and read the laws that apply to both election administration and campaign finance law, I've got a list in there for you so you can help find those sections that you're interested in when you're looking for them. So that's it.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gehring. So we're going to move into introduction of bills. We have two bills that were actually referred to us from state government operations. And the first bill we're going to take up is Representative O'Driscoll. Would you like to present your bill? And I understand you have an author's amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Driscoll.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Mr. Chair, has a bill been moved before the committee for consideration?
Could you please move?
Sure. As a member of the committee, I move House file. What would you like to have done with this, Mr. Chair? Did you want to lay it over, or are you going to move
We're going to refer it back up to government operations.
Okay. Then I move House File 14 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Representative, I think you meant to refer 17?
17 would work, too, because we got two bills that are pretty much identical here. Let's try 17. We'll
Sounds
let
good.
Representative Nelson do 14. I just showed him how it's done is all.
Okay, you've moved your bill. It's now before us.
Mr. Chair, I also have an author's amendment, and basically what it does, explain the bill and the purpose of the amendment, and then ask the committee to amend the bill as presented. What House File 17 does, and to the same degree House File 14 does, is it picks up on things that were left unfinished last year. Congress had appropriated, and President Trump had signed into law, the fiscal budget, which also last year, which included money for communities to be able to shore up in the states their voter election systems and various things. And Minnesota was allocated plus or minus $5 million on that. It does require a local match from the states on that. And at the end of session, when this money was being made available, we attempted to try to get a bill passed and to the governor's desk for signature, and for various reasons it did not happen. And because this is important to the state of Minnesota that we preserve our voter integrity processes, I have chosen to bring this bill back, and so has in House File 14 Representative Nelson brought back the same concept. This money does not appropriate new money. The Secretary of State's office has made expenditures that do qualify for the match, and we are asking for those dollars right now to be able to be applied toward the match and to free up the approximately $5 million that is available to the state of Minnesota to, as the Secretary said, begin to shore up the SVRS system and other systems here in the state of Minnesota to protect against phishing, hacking, and other kinds of things that would happen with our systems. So what the A1 amendment does to House File 17, Mr. Chair, is it changes the date that those monies would be made available to the Secretary of State's office for the purposes that I just outlined, moving it from fiscal 2020 to fiscal 2019 so that we would have access to those funds so we could continue or get started in that process of shoring up the system. And so I ask members for the support on the A1 amendment to House File 17.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions on the A1? I think it's a pretty straightforward amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted, and on with your bill.
And Mr. Chair, the bill as amended, and I gave kind of an overview on why we had the date change in there, so if there's member questions, I'm happy to stand for those right now. I do not have any testifiers. I know that the Secretary is here, and as I mentioned earlier, House File 14, House File 17 are relatively the same mission, same idea. These have been bipartisanly supported for the preservation of our systems here in the state of Minnesota. And so with that, I stand for questions of the committee, or if there are testifiers that from the public that would like to testify on the bill.
Any question from members? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask our Secretary of State regarding these funds, when they were they notified about the federal appropriations of these funds for Minnesota to ask? Well, could we call,
sure.
Mr. Chair, could we call up Secretary
yes.
of State Simon?
Mr. Simon, come.
Okay. Thank you, and Mr. Chair. Secretary of State Simon, I was wondering, trying to get some background on the history of how this all played out. Was your office notified about the federal appropriations that Minnesota had these funds that could become available to them before or after the Minnesota was notified that we were one of 20?
Oh,
I guess I'm getting results from the web. I didn't even say okay, Google, either. So embarrassing. Okay.
That's
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd rather ask the Secretary of State. I think it might be more accurate. Okay, so I'll ask that again. So when were you notified that the federal government had appropriated these for states to be able to access? Was it before or after you were notified that Minnesota was one of 21 states that had been targeted on, you know, bad actors, those on acting on behalf of the Russian government?
Secretary Sam.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, it was after. So the timeline was we and all the states that were among the 21 that were targeted were notified in September of 2017. And then in March of 2018, I remember where I was, and I was sitting next to Representative O'Driscoll on one side, I don't know which side, and on the other side, Representative Nelson, just like they are today. And it was in a hearing in the evening when we heard that Congress had passed that law in March, third week in March.
Oh, wow.
That's more precision than you wanted.
Right, yes. But, yeah. And Mr. Chair, probably more than Google would have been able to provide me.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Bernardi and Secretary Simon. Just a reminder that with new technology in phones, that sometimes our phones will respond to what we say. So let's be sure to either turn off that feature or turn off the phone while you're in the committee hearing. Otherwise, we might get really random answers to questions we never wanted to have. So thank you. Are there any other questions from members? Yes, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the secretary or to the author. I have a question regarding how we report these funds, how the public understands how these funds are used. I know that I've been part of a group that's talked about how we can use them and proudly saying that Minnesota is further ahead than a lot of other states with regard to how we secure our elections. So how are we going to be using these funds and how are the public going to know about that?
Mr. Chair, I would refer to the Secretary's office, as those would be within his financial jurisdiction.
Okay. Secretary Sine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. So as you heard, we didn't get the money last year, and part of the urgency of this hearing is we are literally the only state in the country that did not get all of its money. In our case, it was $6.6 million, that we didn't get that money before the 2018 election. But there are some heroes in this room who have been very helpful on a bipartisan basis on this effort, namely Representative O'Driscoll, Representative Nash, you, Representative Halverson, Representative Nelson, and others who were part of a working group that we put together in the interim. And we did what I'm not aware of any other state doing. It's certainly not required in federal law, not required in state law, but we put together a working group. We had all four caucuses, staff and members represented. Experts from the IT community, experts from the disability community, experts and representatives from the counties, cities, and townships, and we said, all right, let's come up with a blueprint. Let's come up with a menu, a plan for how we're going to spend this money, and I think that's in your materials right now. We broke into five subcommittees, and we came up with a plan of how to spend this money. In terms of how it's tracked, like who's going to determine whether we're doing what we said we were going to do, there's a federal office called the Election Assistance Commission, EAC, and they are tasked with making sure they track every penny. We're going to have to keep track of our time or any outside vendor's time on this, all expenses. They do audits. They do oversight. So because it's federal money, naturally, they want to make sure they don't just cut a check and say goodbye. They cut checks. And anyone who was around or knows someone who was in the last distribution of HAVA money back in 04, 05, 06 in Minnesota knows that they are very serious about that. It's not just cut a check, goodbye, have fun. It's cut a check, and you report to us. And we want to see numbers. We want to see time spent. We want to see all the rest. So that's the major policing will come from the EAC as to how this money is spent. But we do have that plan, thanks to the members and others who I mentioned who went to those meetings during the past interim.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. Any other questions? Representative Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question can go out to the author or to the Secretary of State. Currently, are there any ongoing threats to our election system? And if so, could one of you briefly summarize those?
Mr. Chair, the only threat that I could report is the one I shared in the committee where I'm not in the system. So other than that, or easily found in the system, I will defer to the Secretary for other threats.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mann. Yes, and as long as we're on this subject is, in my judgment, the number one threat to the integrity of our election system. In 2016, we were one of the 21 states targeted by a foreign government. That's very serious. Fortunately, nothing bad happened. No one was able to get in, so that's good. But in two of those 21 states, they did get in. And in one of those two states, they really got quite far in. And so all I can tell you is what the Secretary of Homeland Security told me herself in a meeting last year, where I and some other secretaries met with her in Washington, and the word she frequently used and pointedly used is, this was an attack, her words. And she'd say, let's be clear, this was an attack, her words. That's the intelligence community. And what they have also told us, and there's some that I things I probably shouldn't say, but this I can say because it's been said publicly. They have told us in this community, not just in Minnesota, but in the elections community, to expect more of this from more sources, and not just governments, but other sources as well. So some of you have heard me say this, but and this isn't just in elections or just in government. This is in the private sector, as Representative Nash knows very well. This is kind of a race without a finish line, cybersecurity. Whether you're a bank or a retailer or a school or the Secretary of State's office, the bad guys get smarter. Some of them are bankrolled by folks with deep pockets, including foreign governments. And you've got to stay one step ahead of the bad guys all the time. There is no finish line. There's no end zone where you get to spike the football. That's it. Every day, all the time. And that takes a lot of focus, and ultimately it does take resources as well. So I will only tell you what the intelligence officials have told us time and time again, privately, and they've spoken about this publicly. It is a big problem, and we got to keep our eye on the ball. That's what they tell us.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Answer Representative Mann's question. I work in the cybersecurity industry, and on a daily basis, not only foreign governments, because it's not just foreign governments, organizations that operate inside of countries that have no extradition treaties open up shop, and they probe not just governments but businesses and organizations on a daily basis. And if you were to talk to the chief information officer for the state of Minnesota, sees a very high amount of traffic from, we'll just call them bad actors, because it's not some pimply-faced kid that's in his mom's basement necessarily that's going out for kicks. That is a thing. But it is foreign governments. It is nation states that allow that to happen within their borders. And it is a daily occurrence. The firm that I work for has been in on the Target breach. We've been in on a large number of other breaches. And there's a significant difference between being probed and being breached. Even within the cybersecurity community, it's difficult to get a common language, and that's one of the things that we strive to do. But being probed is very, very different than being breached. And we were probed, but we were not breached. But prudence says that we should begin taking these things seriously, particularly as we expose more online activities to the public. You can now register to vote online, and it is not difficult through a number of vectors to compromise the database. You saw that at the Department of Health this last year, there was a breach that happened as a result of an email attack called phishing. So somebody sent a malicious email with a piece of software that looked like something that they should click on it. That's how that was breached. This is a daily occurrence. It happens at all of our places of work, even sometimes without you knowing. So this is not meant to look for a Russian under every rock, but this is meant to say that this is critical infrastructure, and this is something that we need to take seriously. I know this is more than you were hoping for, but it is a very serious issue, and to put it in perspective, in the private sector and in other government sectors, this is a billion-dollar a year activity that people spend money to shore up their company's defenses and their government's defenses. So it's a very important issue.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll and Secretary of State Simon, I actually have two questions for you. It's my understanding that Minnesota is one of the few states that does not yet have access to this fund, and I believe that is what this bill is intended to do. Could you speak to any potential impacts that may be at play here to not having access to that money at this time?
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner, yeah, let me just highlight one. So one consequence of us being the only state not to get this money in time for 2018 is we could not get a head start on what is the most important long-term project from our vantage point, which is modernizing that SVRS system, the statewide registration system, again, built and built well in 2004, not 2014, thank you, 2004, 14 years ago, but is in substantial need of modernization and upgrade. And there's no mystery to it. Some of you remember from last year, for example, about $1.5 million of this money we want for, and there's no, here's all it is. It's hiring three people to do coding for 4 years. That's it. No mystery, no more layers or levels. Three people, 4 years, coding. And I've asked the question, which might be going through your head right now, is, well, could you get it done in 2 years if you hired six people, or 1 year if you hired 12 people? And the answer I get consistently, and we have others here from our office who can really dive in on that, is no, that's not the way it works. It has to be rolled out bit by bit, module by module. It's just not the way it works. And so it's three people for 4 years. We weren't able to get a head start on that long range. I would have loved to start getting going on that in June and July. We can't. As soon as we get the money, we're going to do that. That's what we need to do. I will just point out, as to the 21 states that were targeted in 2016, and people ask me about this, we're in really good shape in Minnesota in one sense. We're a paper ballot state, so I'm not as concerned. I wouldn't say I'm unconcerned, but I'm not as concerned about mischief at the polling place. We have paper. You can touch it, feel it, see it. Hard to hack paper. What I'm most concerned about, without giving a roadmap to the bad guys, and this is just obvious, is not so much the polling place, but it's the centralized functions like SVRS. The two states I mentioned that were compromised, the compromise occurred in their equivalent of what we call SVRS. It was the database. It wasn't monkeying around with numbers. It wasn't adding a zero to a vote total or taking away a vote table. No, it was getting into that database. So naturally, modernizing that database that's 14 years old is priority number one for us.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to maybe ask Secretary Simon to follow up a little bit on the personnel that would be hired on here. My recollection would be that we would not be using, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way when I raise this, I'm not going to be coming from internal staff being Bennett, where there have been some challenges that have been noted in the past. I think these are individuals that are going to be hired from the outside that have this particular level of expertise, so the state of Minnesota would have from an outside source that qualified staff to be able to do what needs to be done to shore up our system. And that's my recollection. I would just ask the Secretary to provide any clarification if I've missed anything on that.
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, that's correct. And just for the record, we are not a Minute office. There are offices, agencies, others that are tied in and have all their IT activity or substantially all of it through Minute, but Minute, we're not one of those. The only thing Minute does for us is it does for, I think, every single state office is things like some email functions, some other things, but we're all in-house. All of our stuff is in-house, so we don't partner with Minute in any sort of regular basis, and we're not going to start.
Thank you. Representative Bonner.
Chair, Representative O'Driscoll and Secretary of State Simon. So a follow-up on that and a question. So I have to tell you that I come from the IT industry and have worked for many Fortune 500 companies in this state. And I know 14-year-old infrastructure is always a challenge. And I know they internally find ways to consistently look for ways to upgrade their systems as well. So I'm glad that we're looking at solutions to actually tackle that issue. It is a big issue, and I have also worked for Target and some of those folks who I know are very serious about security, and yet they had issues. So I think we do need to take the threat seriously. So thank you for that. And the question then, and this is more of a logistical question, and perhaps this is for Representative O'Driscoll. I believe there was a match component involved in that for the state. And is it accurate to say that the state's commitment to that then is around $110,000? Did I read that right?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I will start that conversation. The math and record keeper and accounting on this is going to be the Secretary's office. There's a 5% match that's required under the federal program that allocated the $6.6 million plus or minus that the Secretary had indicated. And so that would put Minnesota's match at around $330,000. Of that $330,000 that the state would end up having to match, about $110,000, $120,000, again, round numbers, has been approved by the federal government as expenditures that have Minnesota has already made in this endeavor that can be counted against the Minnesota 5%. And so this bill says that that money that is available, the $6.6 million, we can have access to that in the state of Minnesota because our state laws don't allow that to go directly to the secretary's office. There's a stop with the legislature on that, where the other 49 states, as the secretary indicated, does not have that. So the legislature can get another look at this before we allocate and appropriate or make those funds available. The money that we have to have in the match has to come within the five-year time cycle to use the $6.6 million. So we would get an immediate credit then of that $110,000, $120,000 against our roughly $330,000 match that's on there. And that would make the full funds available to the Secretary's office, but we would have to complete our match with new dollars over and above the $120,000 that has already been approved. Long answer, short question. I get it. I'll defer to the Secretary for follow-up.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bonner, well put, Representative Driscoll. The bottom line is we once owed $330,000 now because we sought and got credit for money we already spent on another IT-related project. It's $220,000. So bottom line, and this bill does not do that. That will be left for the budget process later in the session. But bottom line is we have to come up as a state with $220,000, and that enables us to spend the $6.6 million. But we can spend it without getting the match. Ultimately, we have to get the match, but it's not a sense. It's not a question of you can't spend it until you get the match. If we get the money tomorrow, we can start spending it, even though it might not be later in the session until we get the match. So $220,000 is the bottom line, what the state needs to come up with.
Yeah. Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, and maybe this is a math question, just to clarify. So we have received credit for about $110,000. This bill is proposing an additional $110,000, which would mean if this bill were to be passed, then the state's commitment beyond this bill would be another $110,000, or the final third of that commitment to make the 5%.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Driscoll.
What I think the bill does is it recognizes the $110,000, $120,000 number that the Secretary is referring to from previous projects that qualify for this, to recognize that as part of our match, just to officially take what the federal government has told us they will recognize and have an accounting on that. An additional appropriation of $220,000, again, round numbers, would be needed to round out the match of the $330,000. To make Minnesota eligible for the 6.6, which we can use immediately, but have to at some point come up with a math equivalency of $330,000 to round out our obligation on the match.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Any other questions from members? Any testimony from the public in the seats? With that, Representative Driscoll renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 17,
as amended,
be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
As to his motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Your bill is passed and going up to, or referred to Government Operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I suspect that House File 14 will go a little quicker since we did a lot of background.
Yes, I thank you, Representative Driscoll. I'm assuming it is. I will move House File 14 for Representative Nelson. If you'd like to come up and present your bill. And Representative Nelson, you can sort of do the shortened version, maybe on how it's different from House File 17.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Michael Nelson, and to your question, as you asked everybody as they introduced themselves in the committee this morning as I sat here, I first voted the year that, when I turned 18, the year that Representative Carlson, Lyndon Carlson, was first elected. And while he represented part of Brooklyn Center, it wasn't part of the Brooklyn Center I lived in, but so I didn't vote for him, but that's when my first election. Do the math. Don't do the math, please.
Thank you.
Yeah, we used stone tablets that time. Yes.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I'll be sure to tell him that you did not vote for him.
Well, I've kidded him back and forth about that a lot. As he said, I want to thank Representative Driscoll for previously moving my bill when he had the wrong number, but also for giving a lot of the answering a lot of the questions, because the basic difference between my bill and his bill is my bill is his bill. What he told me is that what was last year's bill, and moving forward, this bill here is what come out of the Secretary of State's office this year to try and get the whole match. The initial line where it says 6.8, I'm going to have to double check to make sure that's that right as we move forward. But it authorizes to spend the whole amount of money, and as again was talked about, the $110,000 that has already been spent will be counted for the match. We'll have to come up with the other $220,000 to make that match, but we can do that over the 5 years. And it also lists the other differences. It lists what in the bill here what they're going to use the money for, which is what they're authorized to use the money for. And other than that, that's essentially the difference. And this would be effective the day following enactments, so that they could immediately start spending that money when this gets signed by the governor.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Any other questions? I think we've gone through quite a bit of them, but Representative Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering procedurally, should we just back up and redo the motion for his bill to make sure it's in proper order?
I'm sorry. The motion was made to move House File 14 and re-refer it to Government Operations.
That would be the proper place. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just procedurally, you made that motion?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question on the bill that I'd like to talk a little bit about, and it has to do with lines 1.9, 1.10. It talks about the security of the federal law, including but not limited to. I have a question on what line 1.12, improving accessibility, would mean. That's new language. That's different from my bill, and I just want to make sure that the committee has an understanding of what that means by improving accessibility. Perhaps the secretary, since it's his thoughts on this bill, would share that with the committee.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative O'Driscoll. Yes, this came about because when we were doing our working group work over the interim, we had representation there from the disability community. This is the EAC, which I mentioned in Washington, has made clear this is within the purview of the money. We just wanted to put it within statute. So there are situations where some accessibility, some security-related accessibility modifications can be made that cost money, and that this money could be used for that purpose.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary Simon. Any other questions? Representative Nash.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, yesterday in my office I had a member of the blind community say that this was a very important aspect for them, because to preserve ballot integrity, they have concerns that with this going unaddressed, that the their vote would have to be filled out by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And they don't, as much as they may trust their friends, they don't trust them implicitly when it comes to their vote. And that this is an aspect that is included in this that's important.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Okay, if no questions for members, any testimony from the public? Seeing none, House File 14 will be re-referred to Government Operation. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. You guys are on the way to Government Operations. So lastly, before we adjourn, just a reminder that our next meeting is January 30th. We will be meeting every other week. And depending on how many bills get referred to us as a subcommittee, we'll determine whether we'll meet every other Wednesday at this time, or whether we may have an occasional evening meeting to make sure that we get the workload taken care of before we have deadlines. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.